are back. Our guests today are Eleni Giannakopoulos and Aaron Law. Eleni is with an engineering firm, and Aaron is with a law firm that does bonding, and we are going to talk about flushing your toilet.
Everybody's favorite topic.
Of course. Yeah. Anyone that's got kids talks about it all the time.
It's a big topic in my household.
So. Well, we have boys. That happens. Yes. You know? As I said, our conversations go everywhere. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for joining us. And the microphones are kind of doing their woo.
Yeah, they're not cooperating today, so bear with us. Everybody.
But that's okay. Anyway, so, Eleni, you and Aaron had done a panel back in January. So why don't you talk a little bit about kind of how that came about, what the conversation was, and really how that pertains to, you know, residents and communities.
So it was Aaron's panel, actually, that I joined. So if you want to take over and explain what the panel was for. I mean, it was a great panel.
We were approached by one of the organizers of the panel to put together a panel on redevelopment. And we tried to think a little bit outside the box about what people forget about when they do redevelopment. And we called it, If You Build It, Can They Flush the Toilet? Or something along those lines, right. Because, you know, we're a little bit children. and what happens a lot in redevelopment is you are solving for X. You have an affordable housing issue. You have a lot that you need to have a higher and better use for. You are looking for an increased rateable. And all those things are really important things to consider in redevelopment, but you also have to consider whether or not there's water. That was a very South Jersey. I'm a Hunterdon County girl, so I don't know where that came from. Water, sewer, cable and Wi-Fi, electric, traffic, public transport, parking, municipal services, and you have to think about the school impact. And the reason it's really important to think about all of those things is because redevelopment is really a partnership between a municipality and a developer. That means that your residents are going to come and knock on your door and say, wait, you are in this partnership, and now it's flooding. One of the things that Eleni and I talk about all the time is stormwater. if you put a beautiful new building downtown, but your residents can't get there because you've got a massive flooding issue, building another impervious building does not help your stormwater issue. So thinking about redevelopment more globally, we reached out to, we had another mayor on our panel, a BA, Eleni, myself, and a financial advisor, and we talked about more globally figuring out the financing package, figuring out the municipal services package, and making sure everything works together to create the best product for the municipality.
I mean, ultimately, every town wants to see areas redeveloped, brought to current ordinance requirements for streetscaping, for just the aesthetics of the downtown area. Affordable housing is a hot topic that is ultimately forced onto municipalities with all of the settlement agreements that are now coming into settlements. And the one thing that we've noticed from our professional perspective is that people are so quick to shake hands and agree with a developer to take on an abandoned lot or an undeveloped lot and make it into a mixed use, which would be even bonus. You get a percentage of affordable housing, and then you also get some of that commercial part going on the first floor. The one thing more often than not that people forget, planners are aware of traffic impact studies. They're aware of bus routes for schools, school capacities, and et cetera. But we always tend to kind of forget, well, how does the infrastructure that's underground?
Hopefully it's underground.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Well, yeah, if it's electric
another thing,
and cable,
another thing
that's the other thing.
About.
Since Sandy, that has been something that has been a very dominant feature for a lot of towns to enforce by ordinance that any new developments would have underground electrical and cable and all of the above. However, the infrastructure, that is the forgotten asset that everybody just out of sight, out of mind, they don't appreciate that it was constructed maybe in the early 1900s.
Or earlier.
The material of the pipe, the condition of the soils. Every town has different soil characteristics that, you know, play a huge impact on the degradation of the pipe and the infrastructure, let alone the size. I mean, that was laid in place however many years ago to facilitate growth of, at that time, it was a big audacious goal to have at least 500 homes attached to this. Now we have, you know, three times the amount, and then we have garden apartments and everything else. So it's something that has a lot more, it should have a lot more leverage for the town when negotiating redevelopment agreements, so that any developer has their proportionate share of reaping the benefits of building in that area.
And these are things that you want to include in your redevelopment plan, and then at a more micro level, your redevelopment agreements. For instance, you could build a beautiful building in your downtown, but if it's covered, the entire front, it's got wires all over it, it connects into an above-ground cable line or electric line, and then you've got a giant transformer right in the front of it. Whoops.
Right, so here's an interesting, and you all bring up really good points. What we struggle with as elected officials is, you know, to your point about the affordable housing settlements mm-hmm. coming down, we're not necessarily given options. I mean, redevelopment gives us the ability to control somewhat, mm-hmm. but there are some, in some cases, where towns have not settled, wound up with additional litigation and more housing than really the infrastructure can support. How do we help municipalities, or how do you help municipalities that find themselves in those positions where they don't have the infrastructure, they've got no recourse because the courts have now mandated this, and a developer's like, I got my agreement right here that says I'm going to do this regardless of anything else within the town. You know, that's probably what we struggle with most, mm-hmm. especially as small towns with limited resources.
Absolutely.
I mean, you all know, you work with most of us, mm-hmm. you know, our budgets are tiny. Developers' pockets are much deeper. So how, taking it in the perfect situation where you incorporate all that, what happens when it's not a perfect situation?
So the firm that I work with represents municipalities and developers as well, all in the same, provided there's no conflicts in the area that we are representing developers. One thing that we have come across that is very, very useful is that if the municipality puts forth a resolution and amends their town code mm-hmm. to put the responsibility on the developer to provide proof that the site can sustain all utility demands, they have to produce a report on their dime with their professionals to show that the current capacity is or isn't adequate. Their position in how to improve it to sustain their redevelopment project is something that they would propose to the municipality so that their consulting engineer could do that review. So that was something unique that we saw in a couple of towns where we represent the developer. They want to put a 200-unit through the affordable housing settlement. And while everything else worked out, that they got the approvals and the green light to proceed with that project, now we're in the position of getting will serves and commitment for water allocation and for sewer. And their ordinance, actually, their consulting engineer has a capacity analysis report that they have conducted stating the limitations of the current system. Mm-hmm. And every developer coming to the table has to show and prove that by lining the sewer main for 8,000 linear feet will, in fact, reduce the infiltration and inflow that is currently showing a surcharge of flows to the treatment facility. So that in itself is something that is not the burden on the municipality. It's by ordinance.
Right.
The planning boards are then fully aware that it's part, because that's another thing. The planning boards are so in tuned of what they have to focus on and look at. They don't necessarily know what the infrastructure, water, sewer consultants are pleading that we are enforcing.
Right.
So that full transparency is definitely warranted. But once you have it in an ordinance, it really is out there, and they know this is what they have to do. It's part of the checklist.
Is that something, when representing developers, though, is that something you find just turns them off to a town altogether? I'm not going to say, I'm developer X, I'm not going to bother going to to townwide because
they've paid a lot of money to see this project through litigation for affordable housing. The cost overrun of having to take serious consideration on the infrastructure is really that rate of return of what they have already invested. And now they got the settlement agreement. Now they can build. You're right. Going to walk away on what's your magic number? Is it $1 million? Is it $2 million?
But going forward in a different scenario when you're just a town and you put in, you know, you want a redevelopment zone, you have an abandoned property or you have a vacant, you know, property that is in need of redevelopment, and there's a developer who's interested, and then they see this on the books, they're going to go, why would I go to that town? Or is that not the case? I'm curious to see what you're thinking.
I think the issue is if your building doesn't work, if you put in gas stoves, although I don't think people are doing that in large buildings, and there's no gas, or every day there's a pipe burst, or you know, in the downtown. Or you can't get out of your parking lot because traffic is so built up. No one wants to build a bad project because mayors are good Googlers. And if you see an outrage from a developer in town X and you're in town Y, you're not going to want to work with that developer either way. So I think everyone's interest is in building a good product mm-hmm. that works for everybody. And I think, you know, sort of what we advocate is just prior proper planning predicts positive performance or something along those lines. Sorry. Should have had another cup of coffee before I attempted that. you know, everybody's trying to build a good product. So these things, thinking about them in the beginning, will create a better product for the residents of this development. You know, a lot of developers stay with their product over the course of time and don't automatically flip the project. Those developers want a good project. They want people to be able to walk in and out of their building without having to get wellies to get, you know. Yeah. Those things are really important, and really a developer, a reputable developer, should be interested in having a product that considers all of those issues.
Do you think, though, having to bear the cost, I mean, what's the cost difference to a developer coming into a town that has that ordinance on the books versus one that doesn't? I mean, is that...
I mean, that just... that.
Here's the good news, bad news scenario. Bad news is that statewide, our infrastructure is ranked at a D. So... that's the bad news, yeah. The good news is that it's not just one municipality, it's throughout the whole state.
Right.
So the question comes to the developers, do we want to do anything in the state of New Jersey? So once they have appreciated and done their due diligence to make that decision, they're fully aware
right.
that there will be a share of that that goes to, is it the constructability of a project? There's a great idea of putting a microbrewery, but you know, there's no public water. I don't think that the municipality is in the place
right.
to say,
right.
I don't know if that's the right spot for you, my friend.
You're going to have a great 5-year
yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
But with that said, I mean, the ordinance is a great way to kind of like give it a shot that they would take the whole burden of
yeah.
that infrastructure need. However, and I wanted to just also add, Erin is bond counsel attorney, but she also does redevelopment agreements, which is definitely one of the reasons why I wanted her here today. It's the public-private partnerships
right.
where you share the costs and you both walk away from the table feeling like you're both getting something out of this. You're willing to put in your, you know, proportionate contribution towards that project, acknowledging that this is something that we had to do regardless.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to replace the main to have it in kind, an 8-inch water main,
mm-hmm.
but because of your project, I need to go to a 12-inch, and because of your project, I need to have fire flow, and I need to have the proper pressures, and I also need to loop the system. Well, then, my friend, right. Well, you know, then you can definitely say, my friend, I will cover the costs of the replacement of the pipe all the way to the front of your property.
Right.
You will have to pay the proportionate share of the upsize, mm-hmm. which goes approximately 50 to 100 bucks a linear foot if you're going from an 8 to a 12. And then that linear, you know, there's ways to negotiate that portion.
Sure.
But then to actually have this... you know, approved with all the current regulations, we need to loop the system so that you have adequate water supply. That rest of the burden is really because you're building here.
Right.
And now, can you incorporate some of those costs into the pilot?
Well, it would depend on the... So affordable housing has a whole other set of rules.
That, take affordable housing out of the mix for right now, because that does have separate set of rules. But, so if a town wanted to do a redevelopment and offer a pilot, but you all... part of it is you need to do this infrastructure upgrade.
Yeah, we've seen very creative solutions. I've worked on projects where there was absolutely no infrastructure on a several-mile plot of land. And the way we negotiated the redevelopment agreement was to have a very large, the municipality owned the property. We required a very large down payment on the property and then used that down payment to pay for infrastructure. So you have to be a little creative about it, but thinking about it ahead of time is exactly what you need to do.
So let's talk a little bit about here's another question. And this was brought up, I guess, down at the league, probably 2 years ago now. I can't remember. Everything's kind of blurring together. But there's a company that says they will do, if a town designated their water or sewer system an area in need of redevelopment, so they put a redevelopment zone over their entire water or sewer service area, mm-hmm. and then create that redevelopment zone, there's a company that will do the infrastructure upgrades, maintenance, whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that project. That's a sort of if you build it, they will come situation.
Okay.
I'm going to let you think and ask a question.
Yeah.
So, just applicable to the water system, it wasn't so an area in need of redevelopment. Highlighting only the water lines, not mm-hmm. the whole town per se.
Right, wherever there was water service,
that
city water service.
Right.
So the water lines themselves were an area in need of redevelopment.
Yes, I thought it was an interesting concept.
It is. The
what's the catch though? It's too good to be true.
One of the things that comes up is. If there's water lines in place, I haven't heard of it with water lines in place. I have heard of it with the creation of new water lines. And that's a challenge because if people are happy with their wells, there's a challenge there. If people are happy with their sewer system, there's always there's always people that are unlucky, right? So if you redid your septic tank or you're okay with your well right now, that's great.
Right.
Eventually, you're going to have to redo it, and it's going to cost you more than it would to connect into the sewer service line.
Right.
But yes, I have heard of that. There are some unique challenges to that, and it depends on how you select your redeveloper and how you want to assess the charges to your municipality. But there are a variety of challenges that are created by that. I don't know that would necessarily be my first choice in a process.
Okay.
It does create a lot of issues, but yes, you can do it that way.
So that's one of the things that small towns especially struggle mm-hmm. with is aging infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about it ad nauseum, including on the show.
We've talked about your aging infrastructure ad nauseum too.
We're trying to be proactive,
yeah.
and the last 8 years we've worked hard to really focus on. Making sure our infrastructure is current, because obviously it's cheaper mm-hmm. to maintain than it is to repair.
Mm-hmm.
Because repairs always have to happen in the middle of the night on a
right.
holiday, in the middle
double
of a snowstorm.
Double cost. Yes.
Right.
Everything that
and you've put people out.
Yes.
People are already stressed out because
yeah. So when you can plan for it, obviously it's better. The costs seem overwhelming. Because it is, we've all got such aging infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So a small town that's not done anything in 20 years, other than to
expand and grow,
yeah.
either expand and grow or even maintain by fixing, doing repairs. I'm sure there are pipes in the ground that are 100 years
yep.
old or more.
Yes.
Oh, no doubt. But the other thing is also the fact that water is becoming such a valuable resource.
Yes.
And if you are in the Highlands, and I mean, I graduated from Drexel in 2000,
And my first job was at the Philadelphia Water Department. Mm-hmm. And even then, we had a watershed department focusing on how the water resource is being utilized, depleted, and surplus by watershed, regardless of municipal boundaries. And even then, the thought process was that it's only a matter of time until agreements for this resource will be set by watersheds and watershed limits versus municipal boundaries. The reason I say that is because if you have a redevelopment project, and again, the developers do need to have their due diligence done prior to entering any agreements. However, the more prepared the municipality is, you have the upper hand in making that agreement more feasible for your own needs. So if you have, you know, the industry term is water allocation. Everybody has a permit from the DEP on how much water you can divert from the ground. Also, how much, so you have a monthly allocation, how much you can pump out per month. And let's say that's 10 million gallons per month. Your annual allocation is not 120 million gallons per year. It's really like there's really no factor other than your current watershed where you're at. But typically it's about 75 million gallons a year, acknowledging that the off-peak months or low-demand months will offset the peak demands. So when you have aging infrastructure, and then you also have the unfortunate circumstance, which is the reality of the world, leaking mains, and you can't really identify the areas, especially if you have, and I'm going to get a little more in the technical side, but if you have bidirectional flow in those mains, which means that wherever the demand is, the flow can go, it's not just one direction, how do you substantiate where the leaks are to fix the right areas so you're not wasting staffing and resources to go out and reactively address this? So here you have a redeveloper coming on board, and they want to have their project constructed. How do you also address that need? Mm-hmm. Where how much water do I have left to give to your project, and how much of that water is really realistic? Because I know I have so much I can take out of the ground, but I'm only selling this much. There's a huge discrepancy on that unknown, which we're also calling as unaccounted for non-revenue water. So proactively replacing water mains in a strategic manner, so it's not just by age, but it's also by a little bit more of a definitive direction on micro water loss, et cetera, that will pay dividends on how much water becomes then available for more construction and redevelopment. So the reason I'm saying all this is because it's not just replacing pipe, it's not just, you know, it's also securing the rights to water, reserving that water for when that project is fully completed, and not getting jaded in the thought of, I really want this project to be constructed, I'm going to write an agreement that never expires.
Right. Yeah, we know about those.
Yeah.
You mentioned affordable housing and you've mentioned pilots, right? Those two things can come together to give you a little bite in the rump if you don't consider, if you have, say, if your sewer is paid through your municipal taxes, your sewer water, if you have a pilot for a building and you don't have a sewer water utility,
right,
that building is probably going to, or any large building that's the subject of a pilot, it's going to disproportionately tax your infrastructure, tax meaning strain, not tax, meaning tax.
Right.
It's going to disproportionately strain your infrastructure. And people get very nervous with trying to meet their affordable housing needs and move too fast and don't consider what can happen if you don't plot and create a system that will allow you to proportionately have everybody pay their share.
The other thing that is a double-edged sword is if you are an elected official and you are inheriting a system that has been, you know, not necessarily neglected per se, but their main focus was growth. Mm-hmm. And all the money that was put into the system was more for expending, you know, the system limits to take on more customers. It's still money. It's just how we prioritize it. And then you are taking on the burden of correcting areas that were not taken care of in the past. It's a thankless job because nobody sees the benefits of that. Then you also have to look at the funding
mechanism, and how antiquated are the rates that are being billed to the customers? Do we have a water conservation mechanism where we have like a premium charge for those that are just turning on the sink while they, you know, run around the house doing other errands and not realizing they're wasting that resource? So here you are taking care of what needs to be done to have redevelopment in your town. In order to do that, you need to have a system that can sustain the needs of that redevelopment. And then you also are adopting a rate increase that is realistic to most people.
Right.
And then that plays a factor in the demographic of your town, how many fixed-income individuals you have living there that can sustain an increase of what is really necessary. And nobody makes money out of, you know, water bills and sewer bills. It's really enough to break even. And I have not seen a single system that works on surplus.
Yeah.
We're either breaking even or whatever in surplus that is at the year end is to compensate the debt that comes from doing the infrastructure needs that you have. So from the municipal standpoint, and with stormwater coming also down the pike beyond water and sewer, you have areas that have, and maybe not specific to Hunterdon County per se, but you have combined sewer overflow systems, combined sewer systems that need to separate. And they need to have a separate pipe for the stormwater than they do for their sewer. And then in addition to that, their location might be such where, absent of what is really flowing through those pipes, the river backs up into it and you have a flooding situation. How can you commit that this person can build a multi-family, garden apartments in that zone when inevitably, when it rains, it literally floods the whole area?
Okay, hold that thought. We're going to go do our commercial break real quick, and then we will be back.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
All right, we are back on this exciting topic. So, it's overwhelming for us on a regular day because this is, you know, you do this, we do this. A resident wanting to understand, what questions do they ask?
Why?
Aside from why, because they may not have a choice in it.
Well, let's rephrase that just to make it a little easier for you guys. So, take Clinton, for instance. Everybody in Clinton that I can think of has asked us what's going on at the AMP. They want some sort of redevelopment there. So what should they be asking about based on this conversation? What should matter to them? Or if you can think of another site that is...
No, the two that we have, right? The two, the AMP and the Agway, are the two sites that are going to be... Both have been designated areas in need of redevelopment.
I mean,
I'm
definitely
going to want to hear all about that because my sister is still devastated about the loss of her A&P.
I still get yelled at when I'm at ShopRite, and especially this past Sunday because it was packed.
It was packed like there was...
Someone said to me, you know, if we had the A&P, it wouldn't be like this.
So
I didn't close the A&P.
What's the second one, the A&P, and then
Agway, the global
Agway
building?
Got it.
So... I'm obviously not a Clinton resident, but if I pose the same question to me as a resident of my town, I live in Roxbury Township in Morris County, and there's several different spots that are just abandoned from businesses that unfortunately closed up. And I would love to see a Trader Joe's. I would love to see, and obviously the demographic of Roxbury Township is a little bit more of the mean household income is straight up middle class, whereas the neighboring towns, any Trader Joe's would be more towards Denville and, you know, Randolph area. And I always say, if I had something of substance in my town, I would, and we're right off Route 10 corridor, I bet that we would make those that typically make a right and travel east on Route 10, mm-hmm. they would make a left and travel west on Route 10 to come to Roxbury to find that, you know, store, shop, business. So right. Why not challenge the geography of where we are and put something out there? So to answer your question, public outreach. If I had somebody from our planning board, if I had some form of communication to the average resident, either be by 101.5, a radio station like this, or the website, mm-hmm. Or have it as a random, topic during elections. How much are you willing to contribute to have this, developed in your town?
Right.
So then, if they understand that there will be a proportionate share, even if that means that there's a dollar increase per quarter, per 1,000 gallons in my bill to make that happen,
right.
I would be happy to do so because that inevitably increases my real estate value. It increases the likelihood of people wanting to live in my area. And in it really helps every resident to see all of that redevelopment take place, even if it is an incremental cost out of their pocket, through their bills, through the water bills, through their sewer bills, through the concept of creating a stormwater utility where I'm going to have to pay $5 a month to offset these costs. I think if that would be the approach I would recommend.
I think the question that residents should ask that they don't ask, the two questions, is what is this going to cost me? And then what is it going to cost me if you don't do it? It's very... keep saying global, but
right.
If S&P and Moody's, the two rating agencies, have come out and said, we're going to start looking at your resiliency plan as part of, over the next couple years, as part of our overall credit rating review. Now, if you're issuing bonds or notes or things to pay for the cost of your infrastructure, which you should, because 2019 taxpayers should not be paying for something that 2049 taxpayers are benefiting for equally. But you should think, what is this going to cost me if I do it now? And what's it going to cost? What's it going to cost me in emotional stress? Go ask the residents of Ellicott City, Maryland, what it costs them mm-hmm. to not think about water infrastructure when they had a storm that completely devastated their town and then did it again. And then it happened again. So those personal costs, do you like where your house is? Okay, great. Do you not want it to go downriver eight miles? Okay, well, that's something we should talk about. So the mental tax that it can cost you from not addressing this, I think is a huge factor. And again, your property value,
right.
your day-to-day, mental health and wellness, these are all things that it can cost you that people don't necessarily think of when they see that their rate's going to go up a dollar per quarter or something like that. Well, you have 100-year-old pipes. It costs money to replace them.
Right. So you brought something up as far as the bonding. Mm-hmm. And this is always, this is a conversation we have, not just in town, but with a lot of other elected officials. There are elected officials who believe that bonding is not the way to go, that you need to pay for everything in cash.
Oh, boy.
We dealt with this all the time.
It really is important because, to your point, I shouldn't be paying. If I'm not, who knows where I'm going to be in 2049.
Correct.
Why am I paying for what they're going to have?
That's my personal belief.
But how do we get, how do we explain to people that, that bonding for these kinds of projects is good?
Anything having to do with bonding, I usually explain the way most people understand, which is like a regular home mortgage. Picture yourself paying in cash for your house. But nobody's going to buy the house from you. It's just going to be there. So whether you live in it or not for the next 30 years, it's paid really forever.
Right.
It's paid for. Why should you pay for something that people can benefit from without having to buy in?
Right.
They're not. It's as if you don't sell your house. You just leave it, walk away, but you've already paid for it. That's what it's like to do pipes and pay for them all in your current budget rather than pay for it over 30 years. Why would you pay for something in cash on day one? It ruins your, it can mess up your liquidity.
Right.
There are great financing programs right now in place that you can take advantage of, and every year there are new benefits to getting involved right now. We were just talking about CSO communities. There's a really good opportunity right now to get involved for combined sewer overflow communities through the New Jersey Infrastructure Bank. Get in early and get that money. It's going to run out. If bonding was very expensive right now, maybe it would be a different conversation.
Right.
But it's so cheap, and so interest rates are so low, and it's just, I think it's fundamentally unfair to require today's taxpayers to pay for something 100% that people in 10, 20, 30, 40, or as we've seen with these pipes being 100 years old,
right,
in 100 years pay for.
I would like to rain on everyone's parade that thinks that spending real cash on these projects is the right solution, because they simply do not have enough money to do what is needed. Because this state is ranked at a D on their water and sewer infrastructure, the state itself is putting forward regulations to kind of put the attention on these infrastructure needs. So the Water Quality Accountability Act came up with a nice little honey-do list that every water system needs to address that pretty much gives you a foresight of the five-year capital improvement plan, and it's an ugly picture.
Right.
So there's not enough money that you can put up front to get caught up with the five-year capital improvement plan, let alone the 20-year capital improvement plan, versus the money you have in equity right now that you could use for every $1 million that you choose to finance or take out a bond. Bond anticipation note rates are also at record low. If you do go through the infrastructure bank for a sewer project right now, $1 million pretty much is $60,000 debt service.
I don't know anybody that can afford to pay in cash up front for everything that you need to be doing. So if you're paying in cash for one project, that means you're probably deciding not to do three or four other projects.
Right.
That you really need to do. And ignoring those projects is going to devalue the project that you're doing. And so that's our usual pitch is, no. Pay for it over time.
Well, I'm hearing I'm thinking like next year at the league, this would be a good session.
Mm.
Because, listen, we're all part-time, not all of us, but many of us are part-time elected officials. And because we've taken the interest in understanding, the infrastructure, the water, the sewer, not everyone has that luxury of being able to understand it. And they're trying to figure it out as they go along. And, professionals are good because you guys can give advice, but we need to understand what we're committing our residents to and our taxpayers to and our ratepayers to.
It could be a good, and I probably just think this because I know I'm right on this, but it could be a good point, counterpoint type argument.
Right, sure.
Because I'm always interested in hearing what the other opinion is, but they're wrong. And so I think it would be interesting to see one or two people and then watch. I just want the popcorn and I will sit in the audience because that sounds
The other thing wondering, the Water Quality Accountability Act obviously is a controversial topic of what were the motives behind it, because there's a lot of, you know, chores to be done to maintain the water system.
Unfunded mandates.
Unfunded mandates. Well, the demand, the supply and demand, right? The supply was there for a long time, and nobody was taking advantage of it. The state came forth with these regulations that the demand increased, and now they ran out of funds from the particular program we're talking about.
Right.
There's nothing from state-funded programs that goes towards water infrastructure. And while we are very disgruntled right now to know that there's no more money left in the water bank for water projects until we have priorities of water health and safety hazards and regulatory issues, there's nothing coming back to this program from the state. So we're relying on federal funds that are, you know, funneled through the EPA, through the DEP, through the state revolving fund, and we're sitting here like five-year-olds stomping our feet on the ground saying, I want more. Well, what are we doing about it?
Right. Yeah, they mandated that we go through the program and then immediately turn around and said, oh, sorry, no money.
Well, no, this is the opinion of where the WQAA is the acronym for Water Quality Accountability Act. The highest ranking official has to sign off every year that you have an asset management plan, that you are accountable for your system, that you are aware of your capital improvement plan. So the individual that signs off on that form every year, October 19th, and does not know that the amount of money that needs to be put into that system is not a linear equation with what money you have available and not bonded, then let's have a discussion next year at the league and point out the obvious.
Right. Although you did, while we're putting some digs in, you did point out that it was a good time for the Water Quality Accountability Act, because there are a lot of operators of systems that are getting to that retirement age, and it's like, oh yeah, Bill turned the hose 4 years ago. We do that on alternating Thursdays because that's when the water flows up. But there was no system in place to store all that information. So there were some positives from that.
I think the only thing that arguably, even as engineers, we would agree that the exercising of the valves is a little overkill. It's like if it's not broken, why touch it? Why fix it? It's been sitting there pretty for 100 years. There's a reason to their madness, obviously. But ultimately, that institutional knowledge and the baby boomers that are soon to retire and held that knowledge as job security over the past 30 years is walking out that door.
Right.
And you don't know. So, yes, even for the town of Clinton, we went through a very painful effort, costly effort, to track everything under, you know, in GIS.
Yep.
So we know where the mains are, we know where the valves are, so that we're better prepared and better equipped of what happens after we see those members retire. And we couldn't really bite the bullet and do it proactively until it became a regulation.
Right. Mm-hmm. We knew it was coming down the pike, and we knew that we needed to get started on it.
Yep.
It has been very proactive.
Absolutely.
In their water financing. You guys have stayed really far ahead of it. You're exactly where you should be.
Yes. I mean, I think the hard part to explain to residents is, you know, every time we have a project every year.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's explaining to residents why we have a project every year and the importance of it and, you know, why we're bonding and, you know, this is – and putting in place the process for rates. I mean, we went – how long did – we spent months, 6 months working on that exercise?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out how to determine, you know, a fair way to kind of allocate that cost over the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And I think you have a project every year because you have – 10 projects that you're contemplating, and you don't want to do them all in the same year.
Right.
And, you know.
But then also the concept of you are relying on X dollars coming in for your annual revenue, and the rain that has been hitting the state of New Jersey. Obviously, we have also a regulation, an ordinance in place for irrigation, so we're not expecting too much of that. However, you've seen the water usage go down.
Right.
So you have a decline in water usage, which is ultimately your revenue source. You want to match the books that you are at least spending what you are bringing in. But if you have that wild card and you are not bringing in as much as you had last year, you're losing that self-liquidating utility status. So it's a catch-22 there as well.
It is. And residents are seeing it too. I mean, we're teaching the kids about water conservation. Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing our water bills, which you know, our bills overall are lower than a lot of other private utilities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yes.
But it's still your rates, you know, your bills have gone up. So, you know, people who are on fixed incomes are focused on ensuring that they can continue to pay the bill. So, yes, they may be using, they may be getting, you know, the flushing toilet. Well, or the flushing, the toilets, low flow.
Oh, all the fixtures are now efficient.
You know, everything that makes it so much easier to ensure that you're not, you know, just running the water, turning the shower on as you brush your teeth and, you know, wait for it to heat up or something along those lines. You know, we're pushing ourselves to make sure that we're being more efficient with the water. But at the same time, to your point, we're also, we need to make sure we're bringing in the revenue.
Yes.
And that's
to then bond and make it, for the same $1 million you would use in straight cash.
Right.
To do one project out of your current capital fund.
Right.
For that $1 million, you can do 10 $1 million projects and only spend that million as payment to that debt service over the course of 20 to 30 years.
Right.
So it's really how much are you spending and how smart are you spending it?
And then you get the fun of picking which residents get to benefit from your one project every 10 years.
Yes. Right. And that is absolutely. I mean, we've talked about, we've got all the projects. It's almost like we have the sticky board that we throw up on the wall and like, you don't want to do eeny, meeny, miny, mo. I mean, you're really trying to look at what project, where do we have the biggest bang for our buck?
Yeah.
What infrastructure really needs to be redone? Then you add into that outside the town of Clinton, because we still have the water lines outside the town that we serve other communities. Are there roads being done? You know, so it's making sure you're
that
understanding
coordination.
All of those other pieces, because, you know, most towns have moratoriums. If they're going to redo a road, guess what? You're not getting in there for at least 5 years, if not longer. I mean, I'd personally like to see 10 years on some of our roads, but
I think that the more prepared a water system is, and a municipality is on having a plan in place, you can then enter into redevelopment agreements without a bias to the redeveloper or to the location or to anything. If you have a master plan of, okay, we acknowledge we are running out of water. We acknowledge that all of the affordable housing settlements are going to come in time, and we need to proceed with the construction.
Right.
What are we doing about it? Are we going to wait for it to happen, or are we going to proactively have a plan in place so that if we do have that conversation, we can show that we have done our due diligence, we saw it coming, this is what we wanted to do, this is a nice location for the well, it's in a surplus HUC, we can definitely consider purchasing the parcel if need be, or an easement, have some bartering capability with the person that owns that lot or that area, and then it's already in writing. So then to your public, the outreach, it's predictable.
Right.
It's nothing that was done behind closed doors, and you're transparent, and this is what we need to be aware of.
And if you whiff on the master plan, you can still work through it in a redevelopment plan for site-specific, and you shouldn't forget the things that are in your master plan that would still apply to your redevelopment plan. Just because you have a redevelopment plan doesn't mean you still have, you know, too much impervious coverage. You still have to deal with those things when you're doing it on a more micro level. So,
and then dealing with state entities that may have an impact. So if you're on a state highway, or if you have waterways that are now getting reclassified as C1s, you know, how does all that come into play?
So there's this huge issue that we have. It's called climate change. So I know that it's something where we're like, oh, it's so great. It's November and it's 75 degrees out. I love it. All right, can we just take a step back and realize that this is not the norm? But it now is becoming the norm. So if you take a look at, and of all people, I am not one to say that I am, you know, I'll just leave it at that, because anything I would say at this point would probably get me in trouble. But you know what? We need to be aware of the luxury of just doing everything recklessly and not seeing what that costs to our environment.
Right.
Can we change climate change in the state of New Jersey? Probably not. It's a global issue.
Mm-hmm.
But can we be smart about it? So the C1 category on the streams and everything, yeah, we needed that like a hole in our heads. But it's necessary. And this is an engineer talking, and this is what would delay my project. This is what would probably, like, right. you know, and how do I predict those conflicts with the agencies that will approve our projects and not communicate that to my client that, I'm sorry, I need another X dollars to have that argument with them. Right. So I know that this is not helping me personally.
But in the long run, it is.
But in the long run, we need to be aware of it.
Yeah.
Yep, because if you build and...
Which is the whole stormwater concept.
Right, right.
Yeah.
The bill was signed in March. Everybody is like, you know, walking on eggshells. Let's not say the S word. But you know what?
That's not the S word, right? But yes.
It is now.
We actually did do a presentation that the first time we did it, it was called... she wrote rain tax on the cover.
No, I said it's not a rain tax.
No. I wrote it's not a rain tax. That was like the edit, and it became the title.
Right.
That is actually not an unfunded mandate. That is a financing structure to help you figure out how to deal with your previously unfunded mandate.
But here's, you know, that's the interesting... True.
Yeah.
But what people hear, mm-hmm. because everyone hears something differently, and the environmentalists are looking at it, I'm getting another tax. Not realizing that you can identify that it's, you know, on commercial properties. It doesn't necessarily mean it's on every residential property that you have.
Eleni referenced a map earlier that talked about went through the entire United States. Oh, that we were off camera when we were talking about that. Went through the entire United States and wrote how many number of stormwater utilities there are per state. Our state has zero. We're one of like three states with zero.
There's 40 states. Including, not including Washington, D.C., so 41, that have over 1,700 stormwater utilities in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those, we got hit with Sandy and did nothing.
Right.
Or we're holding our fingers crossed mm-hmm. and hoping it doesn't happen again. I mean, it's shocking we haven't thought about it yet. The first one was in the 70s, so it's not even that it's coming now. It was, you know, Al Gore's environmental push that brought this on. This has been going on.
Right.
We're just the last. Pennsylvania has 40. I mean, it's not even, and it's Pennsylvania. It's more inland than we are, you know, like, and how can we proceed without having our eyes wide open and then having a conscious decision to choose what to do? Having it automatically as a no is not the way that we need to approach anything. And having enough information, we're more than happy to come back and chat on this another day. We could definitely go on for hours on this. And it's not the solution to every municipality.
Right.
Absolutely not.
But each municipality needs to look at it and do their due diligence to determine if it is the right way to go.
You could have a developer face-off, right? Where a developer says, I want to build in your downtown. And you say, yeah, you can't because you're going to build on a plot of land that doesn't have any macadam on it. And you're going to make it completely impervious. And once you do that, we're going to have a flooding issue. And the developer says, that's cool, I'll pay for it. Okay, well, how do we go about doing that?
Right.
What if you're at your debt limitation and you don't want to go to the local finance board and apply for a waiver? Well, you can create a stormwater utility.
Right.
And figure out a mechanism to allow for that developer to pay for the required infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, and then you start talking impervious too. So, what defines impervious? It's not just macadam, right?
Correct.
So, if I have a gravel parking lot.
There's a word that's semi-impervious.
Semi-impervious.
That was semi-impervious. Yeah. I feel like there's a better word that I can't remember.
Porous pavement.
Maybe that's it.
But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a purport. It's a service. Right. It's a utility. It's not a tax, right? And it's not. Because it's a user fee, and it's your proportionate share of the benefit of the stormwater infrastructure. So we're focusing on water, we're focusing on sewer, and we're not focusing on the pipes that, you know, so simply fill up with leaves, and there's no line item in any budget
right.
to clean them out, to maintain them, to flush them, to make sure.
On my house.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's always covered under the Department of Public Works. It's always a percentage of the resources there.
Yep.
But you know what? Snow plowing is stormwater management.
Right.
It's the same thing in the winter. So it's again, that could be a topic all
and
by
the
itself.
New Jersey Infrastructure Bank has a lot of great funding mechanisms that are low cost, low interest. And if you haven't gone through the Infrastructure Bank, I know you have, Mayor, quite a few times. If you haven't done it lately, especially for stormwater situations and along those lines, there are they're much faster, much better, much easier to deal with than they have been in 10, 20 years past.
We're involved in the stakeholder meetings, Aaron and I. We're also in work groups that I'm on the advisory committee for the iBank for their transportation program that they're launching or have launched. And again, to everybody listening that is of in a position to consider this,
right,
it's only a matter of time until that money runs out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it replenishes. It's a state revolving fund. But the CSO communities have a deadline of June of 2020 to finalize their long-term control plan,
right,
which is it's exactly that. It's a long-term control plan to control the number of surcharges into the rivers from their combined sewer systems. After that deadline in June, the next step is to implement. And that same state revolving fund that is funding the stormwater projects, the sewer projects, is also funding the sewer separation projects. So the time is of the essence if you're proceeding with anything financed through the iBank and acknowledging where that is coming from. Stormwater utility adds a line item on your budget that is now a self-liquidating utility. It's not impact or can be. It's not impacting your overall debt capacity as a municipality, and that gives you another funding mechanism, and that's exactly the intent of this bill, is to allow municipal governments and local governing units have a financing mechanism to address the other elephant in the room mm-hmm. that is, you know, just waiting for it to have the attention it deserves.
All right. And with that, we do have to end. We are 10:58. I have to run the news. I have to run a commercial and the news. Thank you guys for joining
thank
us.
You for coming.
You're welcome.
I mean, we definitely need to continue this conversation.
Yeah,
I don't think it's ending here. Join us again next week, and we will talk to you soon.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce. Building business, one business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Public hearings and the impeachment inquiry into President Trump will resume tomorrow on Capitol Hill. This morning, former Trump Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who's now running for his old U.S. Senate seat in Alabama, says of the impeachment inquiry,
I truly believe it's not close to impeachment. It's not the right way to proceed with this. Maybe Senate or House oversight is something that could be done, but to convert a normal political disagreement into an impeachment matter is really a dangerous thing.
Police in Fresno, California are still searching for the shooter or shooters who killed 4 people and injured 6 others at a backyard party last night. It comes just days after 2 students were killed and others were wounded in a mass shooting at a Santa Clarita, California high school. And this is USA Radio News.
Hello, this is Wayne Allen Root, relentless conservative warrior, middle-class warrior, and always Trump warrior. I have a message for my fellow patriots across America. President Trump is making America great again. He's the only president of my lifetime who is keeping his promises, and his biggest promise is to build that wall. President Trump can only do it with our help. If Congress won't fund Trump's wall, we will. President Trump is one man against the world, and what globalists and socialists around the world want is clear, open borders. It's time to take a stand. We either build the wall, or it's the end of the greatest nation in world history ever blessed by God. That's why I founded the Root for the Wall PAC. 63 million Trump voters together will raise the money President Trump needs for the wall. Anyone who donates $100 or more will get a beautiful commemorative wall brick. Display it proudly. Call 844-ROOT-WALL. That's toll-free, 844-ROOT-WALL. Or go to rootwall.com. We will build this wall together. Call 844-ROOT-WALL or go to rootwall.com. Root for the Wall PAC. Paid for and responsible for the content of this message. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. Rootwall.com.
U.S. Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer of New York is demanding that dollar stores nationwide stop selling cheap Chinese over-the-counter drugs that he says can often contain harmful materials.
Be anything from an acne pad you swipe across your face to hydrocortisone cream for a bug bite, all the way to something stronger like for a serious burn.
Schumer says such items are being sold at the over 170 dollar stores in New York City and its suburbs. Schumer's call comes after the FDA recently put out a warning to Dollar Tree about similar foreign products being sold there. Dollar Tree says it has rigorous testing programs to make sure that third-party products are safe. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is returning to the bench after she missed oral arguments due to a stomach bug last week. The 86-year-old justice had not missed a day in court until last December when she was treated for cancer. This is USA Radio News.
Friends and family, I've told you about the great sleep I get with my MyPillow every night. Well, right now, you can get a great deal and extra safety because if you go to MyPillow.com,